Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. It's Mike and Lori Kehoe back for Author's Corner, and today we're going to talk to Chris Pascarell about his middle grade and YA books. Welcome, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, we're thrilled to hear what
myself.
You have to say. I'm sorry?
Oh, don't get crazy.
Okay, well, first of all, let's find out who Chris is. I know where you live, and I can kind of tell by your accent, but let's tell everybody where you live.
What accent? What are you talking about? I don't understand. I don't know what you mean. What do you mean by accent? I don't know what that is. I am a New Yorker. If you can't tell, I am a New Yorker. How you doing? I live on Long Island, New York, 11 towns to be specific. Born and raised in Long Island, It's an island, we live on it, not in it. But anyway, I'm a retired New York City police officer, and now I write books.
So that answered my next question, how long you've lived there. So you've lived there your whole life.
My whole life, yeah.
And do you have a family?
Yes, I'm married for 28 years.
Wow.
I'll be 29 next month, and I have two daughters, 23 and 19. One's a college graduate from Fordham, and my little one is a second year at Hofstra University.
Wow. So you've got to pay for the college of your girls, too.
Well, I finished off one. I'm working on the other one. Yeah, to go to medical school, so.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah, she likes all that stuff. She likes all that glowing stuff. My older daughter is actually an English major. She's my editor.
Oh, there you go. Keep it in the family.
Yeah, it works out nice.
Yeah. So you became a New York cop. What kind of education did you have for that? And then did you have any for your writing?
Well, I am... I'm a college graduate. I graduated from SUNY Old Westbury. I have a bachelor's degree in philosophy and history.
How interesting.
Yeah, I actually
philosophy.
Taught a semester at Old Westbury. Yeah, that's
did you
I,
really?
That's why I write fantasy. That's why I write fantasy, because it kind of flows into that.
What's
abstract
your favorite
ideas
fantasy
of the crazy.
Book?
My
yes.
favorite fantasy book. I have to say, honestly, the Harry Potters are just, that's phenomenal. What she did with that series is genius. I mean, she grew the characters with her audience. That's just genius to be able to do that, and you kept them interested. You know, you didn't stay with seven books that were all for 12-year-olds. By the time you got to the last books, they weren't for kids anymore. You know, that was absolutely genius. That was absolutely genius. She kept her audience. You know, hopefully I can do the keep my audience too, which I'm still building. It's a long process. You know, everybody thinks, oh, wow, overnight sensation. No such thing. Doesn't exist.
Nope. No, it took her a long time too, and she had everything plotted out from the beginning, all through seven books.
Yeah, and it's a long process. It's a long process to get your name out there, to get your books recognized. It's all nothing overnight. I don't care what anybody says. Just doesn't happen. But see, I plugged along for all of these years. You know, I started writing when I was in junior high school. They call it middle school now. It's called junior high school in my day. But I started writing then, and I always thought, you know, this would be what I'd be doing. And here I am 40-something years later, finally getting started.
Well, that was going to actually be my next question, is how you started the journey, and you started in high school.
Well, even before that, the first adult book I read, I guess I was 11, 12 years old, I read Stephen King, The Salem's Lot. And I actually thought, while I'm reading this, well, I could do this. I could tell a story like this. I could do this. And that's the first time I ever thought, yeah, I like to write. And I started from there, and I plugged along, tried to go the traditional route, and things just didn't happen. And you know, get a family, and bills and everything else, you do something else. And became police officer. You know, but now that journey is over. I started writing, and I was, my kids were big Harry Potter fans, and that's how I got into the fantasy genre, you know, because they didn't like when the everything turned to vampires with the Twilight. They don't like the vampire story. So my older daughter was like, Dad, you can write a book like Harry Potter. So I started talking about it and kicking it around. And the Destiny trilogy was born. And, you know, I wrote the first book, Destiny Revealed, which I'll give you a little background. It tells the story of 13-year-old twins, Jack and Maddie Austin, as they celebrate their 13th birthday. And they're given a gift of two necklaces. One's a medallion of the earth. One's a medallion of the sun. And it comes with a little cryptic message that before they're able to hear what the cryptic message means or what their backstory of the medallions is, their family's under attack and their parents are kidnapped by an evil wizard and taken to a magical realm. Kids are whisked away to a magical realm by their Uncle Benny, and there they find out that they're wizards, and they begin their journey to save the realms of existence. But it all starts with a rescue mission to save Mom and Dad.
Wow, that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, all of this was born with a conversation with my daughter. Can you talk to your kids? You never know what's going to come out.
What was the biggest challenge you had writing your first book? Did you run into any stumbling blocks along the way?
I knew I wanted it to be a trilogy, so the biggest the first book is not to give away too much. You know, you got pieces of information, you want to tell a story, but you also, in the back of my head, I'm like, well, I want to write two more books. I can't say this now. Right. I can't say this now. And I'm not big on plotting things. I don't have index cards and maps and notes, and I don't do that. I kind of let the characters tell the story. But when you got three stories to tell, it gets a little difficult to keep track of things. But that's the biggest challenge.
I write the same way. I'm a pantser too. But like you said, if you're going to have three books, you have to have some idea where you're headed. But I agree with you. For me, it's more comfortable to let the characters take me on the journey, as I'm writing. So interesting.
Absolutely. I think the characters tell you what they want to do. I mean, how many times you sit down and you start writing and you go, oh, that's not working. Why isn't that working? Because the character goes, I don't want to go in that cave. Okay, let's climb a tree instead. You know, and they actually talk to you, and they actually push you in the direction you want to go. And to a non-writer,
they do.
I'm
they,
crazy,
they,
but
they take
yeah,
on a life
authors,
of their
I
own.
Perfectly sane. Absolutely, absolutely, they do take a life of their own. I know where I'm starting, and I know where I'm ending. All the stuff in the middle, I don't know. It's a wild ride. Let's take it.
Who was your favorite character to write?
Wow. It's like asking me who's my favorite kid. I like the character of Uncle Benny. He's a little crazy old man, kind of like me. I like that. But Jack is very much me.
Mm-hmm.
As that when I was that age, I'm also like that. I like them all. There's some I don't like. I like writing the bad guys. I know people are like, oh, you like writing the bad guys. No, it's fun. It's fun to be a little twisted. I like that. And so I don't really have like a specific favorite. I guess it goes with the moment, you know, whom I was playing, whom I was spending the day with. And that's my favorite for the day.
Hmm.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, it does. It does. Because that's the character you're focused on.
Maybe another way of asking it is, was any character any more fun to write than others?
The bad guys are fun to write. The bad guys are always fun to write. Because you get a little wild with them, you know. They can do and say things that you never do and say.
Right.
You know, so it's a little fun. It's a little freer. But that's why I like writing fantasy. You know, all of that's free. Make it up as I go, whatever I want. It's my world.
Exactly. Exactly.
Do you ever bring in any of your experience as a police officer into your bad guys?
Not yet. I mean, there's lessons I've learned and things I've picked up along the way that I probably do incorporate without even realizing it. But to specifically say, you know, that's a guy that I hunted down and chased for 10 blocks and tackled, but no, I've never done that. Not yet. Not yet. Won't close the door on it, just not yet.
So we already talked about, you said Jack is a lot like you. Tell us about Jack.
Jack and Maddie are twins. Jack is a 13-year-old boy, very much a 13-year-old boy, likes his video games, sports, doesn't like to listen to anybody, wants to do his own thing. Still into school, does what he has to do, you know, but he's into having a good time and very much in your face, you know. You're going to push him, he's going to push you back.
Mm-hmm.
No, he's the action guy. He doesn't spend much time on thought. He just jumps in.
And the sister,
that's
she guess. Different?
She's the opposite. She'll think things through. She's a planner. She thinks things through. She does well in school. She listens to authority. She does what she's supposed to do. So they complement one another. They need each other. You know, they're each one is what the other is not. Which I think works well in the story, carries the story very well.
Very good. So you have three, you have the first book, which is Destiny, what's the name
Destiny
of the first
Revealed.
Book?
Destiny Revealed.
So, mm-hmm.
Paths of Destiny is book two.
Mm-hmm.
And Quest for Destiny is book three.
And have you, I know you, I saw the picture of the first one. So is that one published already?
All three are. They're all of them.
All three are.
All
oh, very good.
Right now. Yes, they are. Yes. Yes, that series is very much complete. Though I may go back to other characters and different stories at some point.
What else have you written besides the trilogy?
I have a coming-of-age story.
Chris, you there?
Anya? Yes? You got me? Did you lose me?
Yeah, you broke up a little bit.
All right. I'm back?
Okay. Yes.
Okay. All right. My other books, well, two other books, actually. First one is a Christian coming-of-age story titled I'm John Paul. It tells
mm-hmm.
the story of a 14-year-old Maasai boy in Kenya who begins to go through the initiations to become a Maasai warrior. But his mother is a Christian and is a visiting missionary, an American priest, who goes along with John Paul on his journey as he has to go into the woods and go on a lion hunt as part of his initiation. And
mm-hmm.
they talk back and forth about, you know, John Paul is very much traditional. He wants to keep up the Maasai tradition, but he finds himself conflicted with the Christianity that his mother has taught him. And he also finds similarities, and he has to choose his faith at some point.
Oh.
That was fun to write. That was actually fun because, you know, a lot of research with other cultures and things like that, and you want to get it right, especially when you're writing about other cultures, because somebody reads it and they'll call you on when you got it wrong. So you try to get it right, but you also try to, it's fiction, it want to be exciting. Well, that was a challenge. That was a lot of fun to write.
It's interesting because our last guest, Randall Allen Dunn, also wrote a book about Africa and had to do the research. So it's interesting to hear about, you know, authors like you and Randall who do, you take on a culture so foreign to what we know, and yet you bring it alive.
I think, you know, if you're going to write something that you're not real familiar with or your audience is not real familiar with, I think you have an obligation to be truthful to it because you
mm-hmm.
don't want to, you don't want to insult somebody else's way of life, you know. That's not what I'm about. I just want to tell a story. And I drew on that culture because I found it interesting and I want to pay it the proper respect. And the only way to do that is to actually, you know, dive in there and see what goes on there. You can't just wing it. You know, I don't want to offend anybody.
So how did you do your research? Well, we all do.
Yeah, you know, the world is at your fingertips now.
Yeah, exactly.
You press a button and you're everywhere and you get everything. And that's how I did most of that, a lot of reading. But I've gotten some pushback because I have a lion hunt in it. And I had a reviewer who didn't read the book. Obviously didn't read the book from the things that she said. but she attacked me for having a lion hunt. And I was like, it's a story, first off, so calm down. Secondly, if
yeah,
you look
really.
It, you'll see it's not a malicious lion hunt. It's not like a sports thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but whatever. Everybody has their own opinion, and that's fine. You know, bad publicity, still publicity. I'll take it.
But that's the culture. That's what they did. And that's what she doesn't understand is we may be offended by it, especially by trophy hunters, but in that culture, that's very much a part of who they were.
Yeah, I mean, that's how you proved you were a man. You went out under the line. Plus, well, not giving too much of a story away. This lion, this story is it's an older lion who's not a part of a pride anymore. He keeps coming into the village and eating their livestock. So something has to be done. You know,
mm-hmm.
he's killing their way of life. But, you know, that's what I tried to explain. Like, just read the story. If you read the story and you want to give me a one-star review and blast me, I have no problem with that. But don't do it based on a description. Don't do it based on the book jacket. You know, but...
Wow.
Yeah, it happens.
How has the reaction been otherwise? Have you had a lot of good reviews for the books?
Yes, I've had a lot of good... people have told me, it's your best work, oh, it's so good. And I was like, well, I hope to get better. But, yeah, I it's my favorite story, absolutely my favorite story. But I've gotten, yeah, a lot of people like it. It's as far as from a spiritual point of view,
mm-hmm.
I think it's true to that. You know, how people do go on their own journey and discover their own way. I think I stayed very, very true to that experience. And I think that's the reaction that I got. That's very spiritual. It's very uplifting. And, you know, I like to show, you know, yes, I write for a younger audience, but I also like to show how kids can grow and change. And, like, my books, I have a parent in it. You know, my books aren't Disney. I don't kill off mom and dad in the first 5 seconds. You know, I have an intact family. You know, they have a safety net. They have adults that they rely on and ask their opinions of. And, like, real life. You know, I want to show that kids don't have to be orphans to learn to grow on their own. You can grow and become your own person by emulating a role model, by asking questions, by having a safety net.
Wow.
The family's got to come back at some point. And the importance of family needs to come back in our culture at some point. And any little thing I can do to help push it along, that's what I want to do.
Well, good for you, because you're right. We need to bring back the family unit. There's so much that takes that away. You know, it's nice to hear that we have a real family, you know, that's a support system. So good for you.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
What do you say? Well, first of all, you said there's another book. We talked about the Destiny Trilogy, and then we talked about the African coming of age. What's the third one?
I have a teenage psychic detective story.
Oh,
very
really?
Like Encyclopedia Brown has psychic skills. It's called
Very
C.
interesting.
Mullins. Yeah, this one's called C.C. Mullins, The Case of the Orange Hair Ribbon. You know, and C.C. is a 12-year-old boy. He finds a hair ribbon in a park, and he has the ability, when he touches things, he gets visions of the people who own them.
Mm-hmm.
And he finds out that this particular hair ribbon belongs to the girl he goes to school with who's missing. His uncle is a police detective, and he brings this to his uncle, and after some back and forth, his uncle finally believes that he does see these visions, and together they go on the hunt to save this young girl before something horrible happens to her. But this is my first one in that. I want to do, I want to keep with the character, but each book would be a standalone, kind of like the Hardy Boys. You know, like each book is its
mm-hmm.
own story, but it's still the same characters. I want to do that with this one.
So I bet you get to bring in a lot of your background in this one, too.
This one a little bit. Yeah, a little more. I'm going to do it slowly, though, because, you know, I'm still writing for a younger audience. But, yeah, I wasn't a detective, but there's things that, you know, as far as police procedure and, you know, there's things that I did talk about. You know, the hunt progresses and you have to bring in the police and different police departments working together. And I drew on a lot of experience in that, absolutely. yeah,
how
that,
do you put together a mystery and put the clues in? How did you do that?
Time he gets a vision was another clue. So it's just he found the hair ribbon and his immediate, like, he doesn't get the full vision at one shot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the first vision was he saw the girl getting taken, but he didn't see who took her. He didn't see what kind of vehicle it was, just that he knew something bad happened.
Mm-hmm.
Then as he sees the story on the news, he starts to put two and two together. And then later on he gets another vision. Now he gets a glimpse of a car and, okay, what kind of car was it? And he's got to put that together. So just in different glimpses, he gets a little bit more of the picture. And as he gets different objects that belong to the girl, he sees the bigger picture and it reveals itself slowly, but through the psychic visions.
Wow.
Do any of the clues actually mislead him in any way? Or do I have to read the book?
Well, you know, you always got to plant that red herring in any mystery you write, right? You
right.
Got to go down the wrong street at some point. So, yeah, a little
sure.
bit. I mean, I'm traditionalist at sometimes. So, yeah, a little bit. You get a little bit steered the wrong way or a little frustrated that the visions he's getting aren't presenting more of the picture. So in that way, yeah, I did kind of stall the search a little bit.
Sure.
I had to carry it out for a couple hundred pages.
Did you have a favorite? You mentioned like the Hardy Boys and stuff. I mean, did you have any favorite like detective story? Like, I'm a big Sherlock Holmes fan, so I started reading that in junior high, and you know, so that for me would be my go-to guy. So did you have a favorite?
Well, I used to like reading the Ellery Queen mysteries. I read. You know, I used to read Ellery Queen magazine when I was a kid. I don't even know if it's still around anymore, but there was different mysteries in that. And then I'm a big Columbo fan.
Okay.
I just like the rumpled old guy. I thought he was great.
Yeah.
You know, so that kind of – that I liked. I liked Spencer. Spencer for Hire books are great. You know, those,
awesome.
those are real good mysteries.
Yeah.
Like,
so you
that.
Went from writing fantasy to mystery.
Well, he's a psychic. I got a ghost in the story, so.
Way
still
cool.
Almost still going. I still get a
so
little
paranormal
going on.
Oh, nice. You've kind of touched on a lot of things. You've got fantasy, you've got adventure, and you've got mystery and some paranormal. And, you know, you really are very versatile in your writing.
Okay, I like to cook, so I'll use that analogy. I can't make the same meal every time. Just can't do it. You know, I got to branch out and, you know, do a little bit of more, you know. I like Italian, but I want to make some Chinese food every now and then, you know. So that's how I write, too. Yo, yes, I love the fantasy, and I will come back to that. That's where my roots are. But I also want to tell this story, and I got this story to tell, and I want to tell a little bit about this one. I'm going to jump around. Well, hopefully it doesn't confuse the readers too much, expecting the same old thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that gets stagnant. I mean, you know, no disrespect to John Grisham, but he turns out the same book every time.
Yeah, that does happen a lot.
Yeah, give me a little
more. I
think
they have this formula.
Well, if it's
working
and people are buying it.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem, is that they're just, and they keep turning out the same story over and over with different characters.
Well, I think a lot of that comes from the big publishing houses. You know, they know what sells, and, you know, an artist wants to change things, but the publisher wants to say, no, keep giving me this. People are buying it. What are you doing? You know,
mm-hmm.
they don't want John Grisham to write a ghost story. They want John Grisham to write about Lloyd. But still, you know, but at some point, you get stagnant, I believe. You know, branch it out a little bit. I'm doing that early, so I don't get pigeonholed too much in my career, and then when I want to change what I'm doing, I get pushback. Right now, I have a publisher who's very free for me to do whatever I want to do. So
who's your publisher?
Very well. Cosby Media Productions.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty interesting story, how they found it. I self-published Destiny Revealed to Kindle Direct because it was mm-hmm. a way to get out there. And Braxton Cosby, who's head of the company, he read the book and contacted me. He's like, you know, it still needs some editing. We can still do this. And we pulled it. We re-edited it. We repackaged it. And, well, we have a nice little deal going on. We're working on
nice.
Making a movie or TV show soon, I hope. We actually filmed a trailer last summer.
You're going to – of the Destiny one? Really?
Destiny Revealed, we filmed it. Yeah, that's pretty – that's a funny story. A friend of mine is in the movie business, and he's looking to start the
uh-huh.
working. So they asked him to make a reel, which would be his, you know, his resume. So he contacted
mm-hmm.
me, and we put together a chapter as a script, and he got the people in place, and we filmed a five-minute teaser, which came out pretty well. But it's funny that this is a friend of mine. We were friends since fourth grade, and we had lost contact.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife is in the real estate business, and I had seen her online, and I sent her an email. I said, "Hey, Gina, it's Chris. How you doing?" She said, "Uh-huh." So we went back and forth a couple of emails, but nothing really big, you know, just a little hello, how are you? About a year later, I get an email from her, an urgent email. "Please call me. Please call Jack," is my friend, her husband. "Please call Jack. He needs to hear from you." I'm like, "What's going on?" There was a rumor going on that I was dead. Friends,
wow.
Friends were coming out of the woodwork to find out if I was dead or not. So
oh,
that's
wow.
how I got in touch with one of my best friends from childhood. That's how I reconnected over my death. And then who knows? We might get a movie out of this. I might have to tell this story when I win an Oscar. But I think these things. But I'm very much alive.
Well, we're glad to hear it.
Well,
Michael is
so
also an actor, so we understand about the reels, and he's getting into making movies with a friend of ours out here, so we understand that.
it's very strange seeing the words I've written and the people I wrote about come to life. But it was also
that has
because
got
he was
to
a
be.
Friend of mine. I had a lot of input. You know, that usually
mm-hmm.
I hear writers get pushed to the back. I actually had a lot of input, which if we get to the point where we do make a full-blown movie or TV series, I hope I'll still have that input. But we'll see what happens at that point. You know, that's still a long road. You know, nothing happens quickly.
Wow. That's really exciting.
Yeah, it's been a fun journey so far. It's been a very fun journey so far.
Out of all your books.
Finished.
Oh, no, it's no
mm-hmm.
nowhere near finished. Out of all your books, what was the most difficult thing to write?
I don't know. I think, you know what? The last chapter in the Destiny trilogy was difficult to write because I had lived with these people for 5 years. Followed their story through three books, and it was over.
Mm.
And I knew what I wanted to write. It wasn't difficult in context. It was difficult emotionally because it was done. You know, it's like, wait, I grew with these people. I developed these characters, and now it's over. So that writing that last chapter was difficult. Even though I knew it was coming, it still wasn't easy. You know, it's like, you know, your kids are going to grow up and move away one day, but what happens is still not easy. So, yeah, writing that final chapter of the last book was difficult, very difficult.
Conversely, what was your favorite thing to write in any of your books?
Scenes in C.C. Mullins, they're fun. You know, because it's like you're going into some, you're taking somebody from reality and you're bringing them to a glimpse of something that's not happening to them. It's happening outside of them and kind of a different part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to tie it in. But it's still fun because it's like, wow, what if we really had psychic abilities? What if I did? What would happen? And you got to think that way. You know, and you got to get the emotion involved in it. You know, what does it do to the person having the vision? You know, does it drain them? Are they exhausted? Are they energized by it? All of that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of emotions going on. And that was fun. That's a lot of fun. When you take a character from 0 to 100 in a couple of pages, that's a lot of fun.
Boy, that sounds like it is.
Yeah, it was a good time. I'm going back to that. I'm writing another one. I'm getting back to another one. And I'm also getting back
so
to my fantasy roots.
Well, tell us about that.
Well, what I'd like to do is I would like to do a Game of Thrones for a younger audience.
Oh, wow.
You know, I don't want to copy the exact story, but I think there's a way to do it. And I'm a history buff. You know, I had a minor in history. And I've read about there's a 100 Years' War in Italy between
mm-hmm.
Sicily and Naples. And I think if I
mm-hmm.
brought that in and spent, you know, 10 years, I could do 10 books and cover 10 years of each book. But then you throw in the fantasy element and you throw in the wizards and you throw in, and you make history interesting. Use the real names, use the real situations, but then also throw in, oh, by the way, this happened because the wizard made this happen. Or, you know, things like that. But, yeah, I'd like to do something along those lines. You know, like I said, like a Game of Thrones for a younger audience.
That would be
we'll
an incredible series,
like
I think.
No,
yeah,
you.
That
we'll
would really be good. Wow, that's going to
yeah.
be a lot more research, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. You've got to stay true to history. You know, especially if we're going to be using the names and the actual places and actually what happened. You better stay true because there's going to be some history buff somewhere along the lines and go, no, that's not what happened. That's the wrong guy. But,
yeah, and I've heard
yeah,
that a lot is that really you don't want to take your reader out of the story by saying that didn't happen. So you want it to be where the reader is totally immersed in that and using that real history flavors it to keep everybody in it. So that's going to be
oh,
very
yeah.
interesting.
Yeah, it's a long road. That's okay. I got time. Nothing but time.
So when you write, how do you write? Do you have a set time or a place or a ritual that you use when you write?
I try to say, okay, you know what, I have time during the day. Everybody went to work. I don't have to be anywhere till late in the afternoon. I'll sit down, and it doesn't come. I always find that I get creative late at night. I don't know why, but that's when things seem to come to life for me. And I am very much a pen on paper. My first draft is pen on paper. I don't really like to compose at the keyboard. I guess at some point I'm going to have to. Now, my first draft is on paper. Then I put it on a computer. You know, I clean it up as I'm going. And then I can hand it to my editor, my daughter. She'll rip it apart for me. She's like, Dad, you said the same thing 10 times. Like, yeah, well, you know, repetition, honey, repetition.
You're driving
yeah,
the point home.
I'm sorry?
You're driving the point home.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah, but... Yeah, she's pretty much a stickler with all that kind of stuff, which is great, which is what you want. You know, I don't want to, just because I'm your dad doesn't mean you have to be nice. Rip it apart. Tell me what's bad. Tell me what I do fix. That's what I want to hear. You know, but yeah, I'm old-fashioned in that, you know, pen and paper. I have tons of notebooks floating around everywhere. You know, that's me. But like I said, yeah, it doesn't, I can't force it, and I try to sit down and say, okay, I got time now to do something. Let me get the notebook out. And it doesn't come. But, you know, I start getting ready for bed, start closing my eyes a little bit. It's like, bang, here we go. We got a story. And I go with it. You know, you can't fight the urge, right?
Yeah.
When it's coming, you better take advantage of it because it'll be gone if you don't.
So the ideas just come, or do you have somewhere you go to get the ideas for the stories?
Well, once I come up with a story, I usually, like I said, I know where I'm starting and I know where I'm ending. It's the middle journey that the character is taking you on. But what I also like to do is if I'm in the middle of something that's really good that I think is flowing well, I stop in the middle of it. I don't finish the idea. So the next time I come back to it, I already have a starting point and it gets the juices flowing. So I can avoid writer's block that way. Yeah, you know, sometimes it makes it difficult to sleep because you stopped in the middle. All right, let me go to bed. I'll start this tomorrow. And you're sitting there all night going, yeah, but if I do this and then I do this. And... But at least I know next time I sit down, I'm not going to stare at a blank piece of paper. I know where I'm going. You know, staring at that blank piece of paper with a pen in your hand, that can drive you crazy. You start doodling in the corners and drawing pictures of dogs.
Yes, exactly. Maybe it's time to get that computer out.
I need a doodle button. I need to find like a program where I can doodle in the corners. You know, then maybe I could do that. Then maybe that would get me away from the pen and paper.
Yeah, Michael is learning to use computers, and you want to comment on how you struggle with using computers too?
Well, what I just do is I just start typing. I don't mind. I write stuff down on pads of paper, or like I had a comedy routine pop into my head when I was flying home from an audition, and I had the stewardess or flight attendant, sorry, she's bringing me pieces of paper, and I was writing on the back of my boarding pass and all the rest, so I didn't lose anything. But I just go open a Word document and start typing, and I don't worry about punctuation, I don't worry about grammar. I just have to get it down, get it out. When the inspiration hits me, it sounds similar to what you're doing. Because if I sit down and say, okay, like you said, it's 7 o'clock in the morning, it's nice and quiet, I'm up, I have time to write. If I don't have a creative idea, if it's not there, I can't force it. I can put words on
exactly.
the paper, but I can't. You know, I can produce something, but I can't create something. If you know what I mean.
Absolutely.
You know,
you can't force it. You can't force the creative.
Exactly. But when it's closed, you're like me. I think it's late at night because, you know, all the distractions for the day are gone, and you know, now, you know, then all of a sudden that part of your brain kicks in. That happens to me a lot, and I'll run off to my office and I'll start. If it's a comedy routine, I'll literally stand there in front of my mirror with the microphone, and I'll just go over it, over it, over it, over it, you know, and then I'll write it down. Because if I say I'm going to do this in the morning, when I wake up, it'll be gone, you know. So you have to get it out, and I have to get it down somehow, either record it or scribble on a piece of paper or just bang it out on the computer, and then Lori comes and, you know, fixes it for me.
I'm like your daughter.
You know, that's what my daughter does. My daughter, she'll ask me, she'll be like, "Dad, you know, this sentence is 6 pages long." I'm like, "Well, chop it up, fix that." Like, I don't know what to tell you.
That's really nice, though, that you have her to do that for you. That's got to bring you guys pretty close or drive you apart.
No. She's, you know, she graduated last year, you know, and she was an English major at Fordham. She loves the classics. She reads, you know, she's reads the Bronte sisters. She's into all of that, and she loves all the classics. But, you know, she's very talented. She's actually, she was doing some freelance for my publisher, and she's edited a few other books, and I told her, I said, "Listen, I got you here, you know. Let's rip this apart before I send it off. This way I can send off a cleaner version, and maybe it speeds up the process of getting it out there to the public. You know, because you don't have to go back and forth with edits all day long. I already have that part taken care of. And the price is right." Yeah, make her a sandwich once in a while. That's all right.
Do you think she'd ever write a book?
She says no, but she is a gifted writer. She really is a gifted writer. She wants to go back to college and teach at the college level. She likes it. She
oh,
wants
wow.
to teach English. Yeah, that's her thing. She's an academic. She's very comfortable in that world. So probably eventually, I think what would come of it, as you know, as you get further along in the teaching process, I think you have to publish at some point, and I think that will probably push her in that direction. But whatever makes her happy, as long as she's happy, that's fine with me.
It'd be fun for you guys to write a book together. Well, I mean, you kind of are now, but to have ideas together, you know.
We actually had an idea. We were going to take one idea, and one basic sentence of a premise. You go write your story, I'll go write my story, and we'll put them together later and see what happens.
There you go.
So, I don't know, maybe we'll get to that point at some time, but it would be interesting to see where we went different or where we stayed the same.
Yeah.
That's actually an idea. That idea came out of watching a documentary on Queen, the rock group Queen. I don't know if you know the song Pressure that they do with David Bowie. The story was that they came up with the music, and Freddie Mercury went in one corner, and David Bowie went in another corner and recorded words to the music. And the song that was made was what they came up with. And they were very much on the same wavelengths.
Wow.
So I'd like to see if we got on the same wavelength writing a book that way.
That would be very interesting.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Michael and I write together. I'm sorry?
How does that work?
Well, I wrote the story first, and then I asked him to read it and comment on whether my character was believable. And he says, well, you know, you could put this here and there. And I said, well, go ahead and add what you want. So what happens is I write it. He adds his color. It's like a comic book artist. I'll pencil it and ink it in, and then he comes in with color, and he puts the color in.
Okay. All right, so glad it works for you. I'd like to people collaborate, and I don't know that I could do that. You know, but I can't ever say never, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Whatever it brings, bring it on, I'm happy. You know,
so if your daughter were to write a book, or anybody who came to you and said, how do I do this? What advice would you give to new writers?
First, read. Read everything. You know, that's where it all starts. What kind of story do you want to tell? What is your story? Everybody has a story, but can you identify it? Can you identify
mm-hmm.
what your story is? Once you have that done, everything else, I can't look at it from a different point of view. Like I look at it as the characters write the story for me, you know? I don't know that everybody can write that way. But to me, it's getting that first word down. Have that first scene. If you had that first scene in your head and you could put that on paper, everything else usually flows from there. It should take on a life of its own. It should write itself. So my advice to new writers would be just do it. Just get started. Don't worry about if it's nonsense. Don't worry about if it's horrible, if you think it's horrible, if you think you're doing a terrible job. Don't worry about that. That's what editors are for. We'll clean that up later. Get the story out. Don't worry about being perfect. Don't worry about your spelling. Don't worry about, like I said, I have 6-page sentences. No grammar, just go. Just do it. You know,
that's good advice.
Advice in anything. You know, if you want to do anything, the only way to get it done is actually to do it. You spend your life wasting away by talking about it. Just do it. Whatever it is you want to do in life, take that step. Take the step.
That's what led us into the movies and the books is we, you know, our kids are all grown and we decided just do it. We're just to take that step and start out, you know, he went to auditions. We wrote the book. We got it published and he got into movies, but we just figured that we're getting too old to not go after our dreams.
That's it. You know, at least I took a shot, you know. That's how I feel. You know, whatever comes of it, it wasn't my goal to become a millionaire. That's not my goal. My goal was to write a story that somebody would like. And I think I've done that. Everything else is gravy after that. But in anything, like, you can't be afraid to fail. If you're afraid to fail, you'll never get started. You know, the biggest successes in life failed 1,000 times.
That's right.
I said before, there's no such thing as an overnight sensation. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. Success comes from keeping at it, from plugging along. It doesn't. Nobody gives you anything. You got to go get it. Go get it.
Very good advice.
Thank you. That's just the way it is. You know, go get it. You want to do it? Do it. Don't let anybody tell you different. It's your journey. Don't let somebody else dictate what you're going to do with it.
How did that philosophy help you when you were a police officer? I mean, did you?
That was something I wanted to do. Yeah, well, something I wanted to do for a long time, and I did it later in life. And it is because people, I did let people kind of talk me out of it and say, you know, I really want to do that. And I got to a point as, you know, my daughters were getting older and I needed a mother at home and I wanted to stay home with the kids. I was like, you know what? Then I'm going to go do this. This is what I want to do. So that's it. I just took a shot and I did it, you know. And I was running with these 21-year-old kids. I was 33, 34 years old. Hey, come on, keep up. Let's go, kids. Come on, come on. But I wanted it more than they did. Yeah, at some point you want it more than everybody else. And I think that's the key to success in anything too. You know, you got to want it more than everybody else does, and that keeps your drive alive.
Yep, it does. It absolutely does. So, if somebody wanted to find out more about you, where would they go?
Go to Facebook.
How can we find you?
Author Chris Pasquarello on Facebook is my Facebook page. And I will answer any questions. I will answer messages. I'm pretty open that way. My books are on Amazon. You can find them there. Barnes & Noble website they're also on. Or cash your bookstores to order them for you. But, yeah, if you find me on Facebook, you can find author Chris Pasquarello. Give me a like on my Facebook page. Drop me a little note, and I'll get back to you.
Very, very good. Very good. Any last thoughts you want to talk about and leave us with and the wisdom of Chris Pasquarello?
Well, the wisdom that I can impart that I've learned in my life is, like we just talked about, if you have a dream, don't let anybody kill it. You stoke your dream. Your dream is in you. It lives because of you. Give it life. Make it happen. Do what you want to do before it's too late.
That's right. That's right. All right. Well, we got about 12 minutes left, so we can let's talk about. Well, we talked about the next book. So, when do you think you're going to start that one?
Well, I've got two notebooks full of different stories, so I like to queue up about three before I have to let technology run my life. I have two different ones that I started. There I'm pulling on my philosophy background. I want to do like the Dialogues of Socrates. I want to do that, a series of that, and just touch on current events. You know, do different debates.
That would be very interesting.
Yeah, I've written one already. You got to get that up in the container and get that out to the publisher. But I started the fantasy series. I started dabbling around my characters. And I've written a few chapters. And however long it takes. You know, and it's not something I'm going to push. You know, but I've done some research. I've done some reading through and see where I want to go with it. And I got the first book ready to go. I can actually sit down and start writing. After that, who knows how long it'll take me. I got 100 years to cover. Maybe it takes me 100 years. That's okay. I'll be
there. Yeah. Well, very interesting. Very interesting.
We'll probably be beaming books right directly into people's heads by then, right?
You know, that's an interesting concept because the physical book is already on the way out.
Yeah. Yeah, which is sad because, you know, when I finish reading the book, I have it on the shelf. It's kind of like a little trophy. Yeah, I read that. You know?
Me too. Me too. I want to be surrounded by books.
Yeah, it's a nice little thing to have. But I get it, though. You know, to me, honestly, whatever gets people to read. If you want to read on your phone, you want to read on an iPad, fine. As long as you're reading. You know, I'm happy with that. Please read. You know, get people reading again. You know, too much stuff on TV. Too much to choose from.
You know, yes, and not a lot of good stuff.
I know. I'm fighting that. I'm fighting it. I'm trying.
So I want to touch on one last thing before we let you go. And you talked about your book being a Christian book. Why don't you tell us about your faith and how you came to the Lord?
I was born and raised a Catholic. And I, through philosophy, yes, I learned to question things.
Mm-hmm.
But there's some things I've come to realize that if something's been around for 2,000 years, there's something to it. There's something to it. And I took a class in college called Stages of Life that used the Bible as a textbook. So I got to look at it more as a history text than a spiritual
mm-hmm.
text, which is a pretty interesting way to look at it. But as I'm going through it and I'm getting this historical perspective, and I'm like, wait a minute, there's more to it than this. There's just more to it than what you're telling me is history. Yes, it's history, but this is a message that has so much more. I firmly believe Jesus became God through the resurrection, and he guides my life through the resurrection, and through the resurrection there's hope for all of us. And that's how I live. And it is the resurrection of Jesus that is your resurrection that keeps you moving forward, that gives you hope. And that's what religion
mm-hmm.
is about, and that's what spirituality is about. It's about hope. Hope in yourself, hope in mankind, hope in the world. And the resurrection is hope. So if death couldn't stop that bit of hope, nothing can stop your hope.
In this week, you obviously being in New York and being a police officer, how did you handle 17 years ago with your faith?
I actually got on the police force after that. I did lose some friends that day. A friend of mine, my best friend from when we were small children, he was a police officer at that time. He ended up developing Hodgkin's lymphoma from that, and he did pass away as a result of 9/11, but a couple of years later.
Hmm.
And the things that he told me that he saw. But at the same time, the brotherhood of people, you know, it came together. Why don't we forget that? Now you always see 9/11, never forget. You know what? Yes, 9/11, never forget. Let's remember 9/12, when you hug your fellow person, when you just
yes,
you let a stranger grieve on your shoulder because you felt for them, where you helped because you wanted to help for no other reason than just the sheer act. You know, when you flew the flag on part of the country, you know, like you just cried because you felt for somebody else. Where
mm-hmm.
is that gone? Where is that gone? You know, so yes, let's never forget 9/11, but let's not remember 9/12 too, because it meant so much to so many other people that you were just, well, what you just handed a police officer water because you saw he was thirsty. Those things, those small little things that we did for each other then. Can we get back to that? Can we get back to that, please?
That's
yeah,
that hope
that's,
you're
that's,
talking about.
That's it. That's where my faith comes in. You know, it's not about the big things. You know, it's not about the big things. Say good morning to your neighbor. How many people don't even know who their neighbors are anymore?
Mm-hmm.
You walk out in your front yard, you got Chris. Hey, how you doing? You got the guy's name. You got Chris from the store. You don't know the people. Say hello. Say hello. Say good morning. You're in the store. Say hello to somebody. You know, on the bus. How many times do you see these kids sitting on the bus? The old woman who needs to sit down. Get up. Do the right thing. Just do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is the right thing to do. And we get back to a little bit of that, a little bit of humanity, then we can save the world. Well,
and I believe you can.
I believe
your stories will do that. And Chris,
thank
I just
you.
Want to thank you so much for joining us, for sharing your heart, sharing your stories, sharing your family. Just we've enjoyed it very much, and wish you all the best.
Thank you. Thank you.
And
so
we'll
much.
Be
I
looking
really
for your books.
Thank you. Thank you very much
again.
Okay, yeah, let's give the titles of your books again. So we've
okay,
got
the Destiny
Trilogy. Series.
You can look at the Destiny Trilogy. You'll get all three, Destiny Revealed, Path of Destiny, Quest for Destiny. Then you have I Am John Paul, and the latest is C.C. Mullins, The Case of the Orange Hair Ribbon.
All right.
Okay. Well, Chris, you have a wonderful evening, and go and enjoy your night. And
thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for the opportunity. God bless.
You too. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.